I first did this teaching in 1988. When I planted this congregation in 87, I was still a student in what was at that point in history called the Institute of Messianic Rabbinic Training. I was a teacher. I had a lot of knowledge, and I broke down, and I did a lot of teaching back in the early days. And anymore, I only do teachings when I'm working with bar mitzvahs, so they can see how to actually use notes. Since that time, I've taught it in 2001, 2004, 2006, 2009, and now in 2012. So I teach it about every 3-4 years. It's one of my favorite teachings. It's something I discovered in the Bible. When I planned this congregation, it was a family effort, and my family really has sacrificed into this ministry to establish and get it running. And I just want to brag on them a little bit. You don't understand the pressure of children. Before I planned this congregation, I had 2 children. As soon as I planned this congregation, I immediately had 50 children. We have 46 people on our yard site list. And I have hundreds of children now, and they ended up sharing me. And it wasn't their choice, and they were very active in the very early parts of this ministry and continue to be so. And you don't see my son very often because he's getting ready to retire. But he's retiring from the Navy. Anywhere in the world, if he tries to go into a Messianic synagogue and he walks in and says, "Hi, I'm Tony Hungerman," he's nailed immediately. And he never uses his last name when he's hanging around Messianic people because he doesn't want to always just be my son. And I just do that to give credit to my family who, as we go into our 25th anniversary, when we started, it was me and my 2 children, my wife and my 2 children. But anyway, we're going to begin in Mark chapter 8. This is a teaching about a parable. To understand parables, you have to understand everything about what I mentioned earlier, the unpardonable sin, messianic miracles, which I'll teach next week. So if you don't understand that, just hang in there. Next week it'll clarify at least why we're talking about parables. But I want you to see how I discovered this and walk you through it the way I did it. In chapter 8, verse 13, it says, "With that he left them, got in the boat again, and went off to the other side of the lake." Him is the Messiah. He's talking about the Lake Kinneret, the lake in the Galilee. And he, with that, he's making a point. With that, he left them, got on a boat, headed across the lake. All right? Now, I'm going to back up one verse to verse 12 just to put that in perspective. What he said in verse 12 was, with a sigh that came straight from his heart, he said, "Why does this generation want a sign? Yes, I tell you, no sign will be given to this generation." It's new terminology that's being introduced. It's about the generation. No signs except the sign of the prophet Jonah, which puts this right after what incident? Nobody knows. The unpardonable sin, right? The unpardonable sin. Once you hit the pardonal sin, everything changes. Everything changes. A whole generation is lost. They are guilty of the unpardonable sin based on a messianic miracle. Which, if you don't understand that, come next week. I'll clear it up for you. Okay, so he's not going to do any more signs. He's also not going to do any more clear teachings, right, up until this point. Mark is not written in chronological order. The only account of Scripture of the life of Messiah that's in chronological order is Luke. Okay, this is not in chronological order, so you have to see what he's saying just to put it, okay, this happened right after the unpardonable sin, because he's talking about this generation. With a sign, what's wrong with this generation? They want a sign. No more signs. That's it. He's fed up with that generation because of the unpardonable sin, and no sign given to this generation. He already said there would be one sign, except, of course, Jonah, which is a resurrection of dead after 4 days, or after 3 days, which is a messianic miracle too. So now we're going to walk through that. But you have to understand that, and you have to pay attention, because this is a stark change in the Messiah's ministry, a stark change. And it all stems from the unpardonable sin. No more signs, no more clear teachings, right? Verse 13, "With that he left them, got on the boat again, and went off to the other side of the lake." So he left them, the people. got on the boat with his Talmudim, with his disciples, and he's heading across the lake. He's just zigzagging across the lake. It's a lake in the Galilee. Verse 14. Nope, 14. Now the Talmudim had forgotten to bring bread and had with them only one loaf. Now to a group of Jewish men, they're thinking about lunch. And they simply point out the fact there's a loaf of bread on the boat. Okay? And it's just where their mind is. It's the mind of what is being discussed. Verse 15. So, when Yeshua said to them, watch out, guard yourself against the chametz, the leaven of the Perushim, of the Pharisees, the chametz of Herod, beware. And he's talking to his Talmudim. He's talking to him about the chametz, the leavening of the Perushim of Herod, verse 16. They thought he said it because they had no bread. So he's talking to them. Now it's his Talmudim, right? His disciples. He said, watch out for the religious people and the politicians. Good advice, right? Be careful with religious people and politicians. And they're thinking, oh, we didn't bring any bread. Leavening bread. All right? Verse 17. But aware of that, recognizing what they are thinking while he's trying to show them something, he asks, why are you talking to each other about having no bread? Don't you see or understand yet? Have your hearts been made like stone? Now he's starting to get a little bit rough with them. Hey, what's wrong with you? Why are you talking about bread? Don't you understand yet? Have your hearts been made like stone? It's a Jewish group. Now he's going to walk them down a path. Verse 18. You have eyes. Don't you see? You have ears. Don't you hear? Don't you remember? He's saying, look, you have eyes, you have ears. Have you been paying attention at all? Don't you remember? You're part of this movement that we are in. Verse 19, when I broke five loaves for 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect? 12, they answered him. They knew the answer. Verse 20, when I broke the seven loaves among the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect? 7, they answered. Yes, we remember, we were there. Verse 21, he said, you still don't understand. You're still not getting it, are you? You're still not paying attention. You still don't get it. Verse 22. They came to Bethsaida. And some people brought a blind man and begged Yeshua to touch him. Now, you have to remember this discussion that just happened on the boat, which happened just after the unpardonable sin. Right? Yeah, put everything in context. Now they arrive at Bethsaida, which is on the northeast corner of the lake. Some people bring a blind man and ask Yeshua to touch him. Verse 23. Taking the blind man's hand, he led him outside the town. He spit in his eyes, put his hands on him, and asked, do you see anything? Well, that's a little bit odd. That's the first time Yeshua ever said, be healed. How you doing? Okay? You have to watch, pay attention to what's going on. Verse 24, he looked up and said, I see people, but they look like walking trees. Oh, I'm using notes. I keep forgetting. That's my problem with using notes. I don't look at them. Flip a few pages. When I'm training bar mitzvah, they always say, look at the notes. Verse 25, then he put his hands on the blind man's eyes again. He peered intently, and his eyesight was restored so that he could see everything distinctly. Okay, there's the story. There's the story of what happened. The story began, though, when he got on the boat to leave. He got on the boat to leave right after the unpardonable sin. Then he has a discussion with his Talmudim. All right? In my estimation, this is the strangest miracle Yeshua ever performed. It's a strange miracle because it's a miracle that grows in front of your eyes. And it happens. You see it kind of gradually spun out. It doesn't just happen. It happens a little bit, then a little bit more, and you follow through inch by inch, and you see the miracle happen in front of your eyes. And in fact, it's actually analyzed as it happens. And you get a little bit. In verse 23, it tells you exactly what Yeshua did. Then it tells you a little bit more of what Yeshua did. And what I have dubbed this is a miracle intention. A miracle intention. It's a miracle intention because I say to the man, "Are you healed?" And he says, "Yes, yes." "No, not really." "Is he healed or isn't he healed?" "Well, of course he's healed." It says he looked up. He could see. Okay? But then again, of course he isn't, because he can't really see. He's hopelessly out of focus. He sees people, but they look like walking trees. And now, when I see these things like this in Scripture, I have to ask, you know, what's going on? You see, it's a miracle. But it's a miracle on the way to becoming a miracle. And it's kind of a little bit of both as you try to analyze these things in the Bible. And I have to ask this question. Anytime I see anything unusual in the Scriptures, what do we say? Why? Why did Yeshua do it like that? I mean, by now he's had plenty of experience healing. This is not early in the ministry. This is reasonably late in the ministry. We've seen that he has already healed blind men before. And the only time that there seemed to be any difference whatsoever, when this fellow came to him who, as far as I can see, didn't have any eye sockets. He was born blind, which is, of course, a messianic miracle. And remember, at that point, he took mud and he filled the two empty eye sockets, much like on creation when Adam and I took clay and he formed man. Now Yeshua takes clay from his spittle, which is significant because he's a firstborn. He makes two eyes. And when they question, you all know the story, they question, is this the one who was blind? Is this the one who was born blind? I remember his own parents questioned their recognition. Well, it looks something like them. Well, he looked different. He had eyes. He never had eyes before. You understand? Important fact was that he was born blind. That's very significant because that makes it a messianic miracle, proving by our own theology that Yeshua was the Messiah. But anyway, that's next week's teaching if you don't understand that. Some of you do, some of you don't. But that's the only time it was really different. Other times when Yeshua healed, he simply touched them or he sent them on their way. But on this occasion, he draws out the miracle before us, and we actually can see it happening step by step. And why does Yeshua do that? Why does he change? Why is this miracle so strange as you look at it? And I believe very simply what was happening is people were getting used to a display of fireworks. I think miracles are happening, popping all over the place. Great ministry, you know. Sometimes for specific reasons, sometimes for different reasons, sometimes for seemingly no reason at all. And these miracles were happening all over the place, but nobody was listening to the inner message of the miracles. They were not beholding the ways of God. They were seeing miracles, but it seems to be like that's all they were seeing. And Yeshua is talking to his disciples. And he says, "Wait a minute. Did you see the miracle of the loaves?" And they said, "Yeah, we were there. How many basketful of fragments did I take up? 12? 7? He says, "You still don't understand, do you? Are you just sitting there watching a miracle? Don't you see or understand yet? You know, have your hearts been made like stone? Don't you see what's going on inside the miracle? You have eyes, don't you see? You have ears, don't you hear? And the very next miracle that Yeshua performs, he doesn't do it in the usual way. I get the distinct impression that behind this miracle is a deep spiritual truth. The Messiah is trying to say something. Because to me, this parable is simply a parable. This miracle is simply a parable in action. It's a parable being acted out. Remember, he's not teaching anything but parables from now on. This is a parable being acted out. And what's the purpose of a parable? You all know from the first parable, the foundational parable, the sower, it's to reveal the kingdom of God, right? So this is a parable in action. It's actually happening, but he's walking out. Instead of telling a parable, he is walking them through a parable. Which is, again, easy to understand if you understand the messianic concept of the impardonable sin. That has been committed, so from this point on, everything is taught in parables. And this miracle was then a parable in action. So what do we have? Yeshua had come to Bethsaida. Bethsaida is a suburb of Capernaum. Capernaum, right on the northern tip of the lake Capernaum. Capernaum, the village of Nahum. It's where Yeshua based his Galilean ministry. Now, they're just little villages. They were called cities, but they're just little villages. All you can visit almost all of those villages. Most were destroyed by an earthquake, because Yeshua said that. But Capernaum is still there, and it's at that northern end of the lake, and you had these two villages in proximity. Capernaum would be here. Bethsaida would be right here. Magdala, up there where Miriam was from, up on the hill. It's the Galilee. But along this dusty road that connected, like, Capernaum to Bethsaida, that's where you'd find the beggars sitting. And they were there for many reasons. Some of them are blind. Remember Yeshua told a story about the blind leading the blind? It was a pathetic sight. You'd see it every morning outside the city gates. All the blind clinging to one another, and the first one blind as well, tapping his way along with his stick, and a whole string of blind leading the blind to sit down in the beggar's pitch. For if you were blind, you were rejected, which is, frankly, something that still plagues our community today. The larger Jewish community has a very difficult time dealing with special needs, which is sad. So at that point in history, there was nothing to do but sit and beg. Others were there because they were lame, and they all sat there dressed in rags, and people threw alms to them as they passed by, entering or leaving the cities. You understand that? As Yeshua walked those roads between those little cities in the Galilee, particularly in the Galilee, that's where most of these kind of miracles take place. There where the need was the greatest, that's where you're going to see most of these miracles. Now, on this occasion, some friends bring this fellow to Yeshua. We don't know what his name is. Doesn't say what his name is. But some people bring him along. And he comes, and it says Yeshua leads him outside of town, away from the crowds. Well, that's not at all unusual, because he's going to heal him. And to have your blinded eyes suddenly opened in front of a gawking crowd would be kind of a shock. So Yeshua leads him to a quiet place, and he anoints his eyes with spittle. That's also not unusual, because the firstborn son, there's healing in his spit. The firstborn son has a lot of prerogatives. The firstborn position in family is always very significant, which is why you either redeem your firstborn son or give him to the priesthood. It's all very, something that exists. But anyway, he lays his hands on him. And Scripture tells us the man looked up. And you have to see that. He gained sight. It says he looked up. In other words, it wasn't the raising of the head. It was the opening of the eyes. He looked up. Yeshua looks intently at him and says, "Do you see anything?" He said, yes. No. I see people. But they look like walking trees. Now Yeshua reaches out his hand a second time and touches him. That's very unusual. It's the only time he has to go back twice. That's very unusual for him. And he opens his eyes and he stares, and as he does, his eyesight was restored so he could see everything distinctly. And so you see this all played out as you read these verses. And we're just going to go through them one more time just to get it in your mind. Verse 23. Taking the blind man's hand, he led him outside the town. He spit in his eyes, put his hands on him, and said, ask him, do you see anything? Verse 24. He looked up and said, I see people, but they look like walking trees. Verse 25. Then he put his hands on the blind man's eyes again, peered intently, and his eyesight was restored so that he could see everything distinctly. Now I have to ask the question. Oh, this is a parable, which I believe it is. It's a parable in action. What is Yeshua trying to show us? What's he trying to unpack for us? And again, I don't want you to miss the obvious. There's no question this man was healed. He had received a touch of Messiah's working of miracles, and he could see. You have to see that. He was a blind man who could now see. He looked up without question. That was a miracle. You have to see that because you can't miss the little things. The trouble was, though, he was hopelessly out of focus. Okay, now what do I think about that? Well, you know, when I meet people who have unquestionably been born again in the spiritual sense of becoming believers, both in the Christian sense and the Messianic Jewish sense, born again spiritual significance of Yochanan chapter 3, there's no question these people have been born again in that spiritual sense. They have met with Yeshua the Messiah, and he has touched their eyes, and in their spirit they are no longer in darkness. They can see absolutely, kind of. Now, they're not blind. You have to understand that. They're not blind. I know they're not blind. I know that when I talk to them. I know they're no longer in the darkness of this world. You put these people back in the world and they're miserable. They're just miserable because they don't belong there. They can no longer be happy there. There's no question about that. They sometimes try to go and be with old friends, and they find all of a sudden, we really don't have anything in common anymore. They can see. But then, on the other hand, when they read the scriptures, they discover they don't really enjoy the Messiah the way they're supposed to. Not really. Their spiritual vision is hopelessly out of focus. And they go round and round, poor pathetic things. And you see them, you may even know them. They just go round and round and round. And it's like, can I see or can't I see? Am I a believer or am I not a believer? Please, somebody tell me. People come to me for advice. I don't know. What am I? Do I have my salvation? Where do I belong? I don't fit into the world, but quite frankly, I'm not sure I'm quite with it the way some of you are when I come in here. And you talk to each other during Oneg or at the picnics, and you sense, I don't really belong in the world, but I'm not really sure I belong here either. Can I see or can't I see? One day you read the scripture, you sing a song of praise, and your heart leaps within you. And you say, of course I walk with God. I have my salvation. Whatever came over me to think otherwise, it must be so. And you know that you know that you know. And then you go out and start talking to another believer. In about 5 minutes, you say, I don't know. How can I really be saved? How can I really have my salvation? You see, I'd never act the way I do. I'd never say the things I'd say. I'd never think the ways I think if I was really walking in a relationship with God and the Messiah. If I really had a relationship with Messiah, I would never do things like that. Can you relate to this? Can some of you understand at least where I'm coming from with this? Yeah, but note the nature of his problem. It's people. It's people he had a problem with. He said, I see people. They look like walking trees. Now that was his specific problem. Think about that. That's really quite an advance. Before that, he couldn't see anything. He was blind. He wandered about in that inky darkness, but now he saw people. He saw people, but they looked like walking trees. But he did see people. Let me put it this way. These people that we've been talking about here, do they see? Immediately my response, yes, they see. What do they see? They see God. There's no question their heart is opened up to God and they know God and they see God as they never deemed it possible for a human being to know and see God. And some among you today are in that condition. You see God. There are some who raise their hands in praise and worship and they honestly worship God. They weren't being hypocrites. They see God and God is more real to them today than he has ever been before. And he's a reality they can see. Shall I tell you what they see? They see themselves. Before they couldn't possibly see themselves in such a mess. But there's something about seeing God that allows you to see yourself. And while you're not always really comfortable, they see themselves somehow coming together on the inside. They see themselves in the Messiah, which is how we should see ourselves. And they rejoice in God as not only in what he has done, but in what he is doing. These people know their sins are forgiven, and they see themselves properly as a cleansed people. These people see themselves properly in the Messiah, and they see themselves as they really are. What do they see? They see Yeshua. Before, he was a character in history at best. Now he's Messiah alive from the dead. It's a marvelous transition. And these people are liable to stick their finger in the air and say, Yeshua is the Messiah, praise the Lord. And they mean it. They're not hypocrites. Do they see? Yes, they see. Do they see? No, not really. They're hopelessly out of focus. Where are they out of focus? Well, they're out of focus when it comes to people. People are the problem. Do you ever reach that decision? It's people that are the problem. God is in focus, themselves in focus. Like I said, not always comfortable, but you know, God's working on it. It's all in focus in Yeshua. It's all in focus. With Yeshua, it just all comes together. It's that grace that you accept by faith. God, themselves, Yeshua, it all looks fine, but it's people. They see people, but they look like walking trees. Have you ever noticed that most of the problems in the body of Messiah are the people that are in the body of Messiah? You know, wouldn't the body of Messiah be great if it wasn't for the people that are in it? This synagogue would be perfect if it wasn't for the people that were here. Think about it. There's so many believers out there that have that Lone Ranger mentality. God, Yeshua, and them. Please, nobody else. They don't come here because they don't need us. They just need Yeshua. So they do their own thing at home. It's much less complicated that way because there's no wretched people. How many of you know somebody like that? Here's the reality. There are tens of thousands of people in the mainline Messianic movement alone. And then you add to that the church. Oy, the people. You know, that's what makes it hard. I could tell you, as the rabbi of this synagogue, this is a great synagogue. If you have problems here, it's because you want to talk to the other people that are here. And that's where you run into the problems in this congregation. is you actually talk to each other. You see, people louse it up every time. And you know what I'm talking about. You come in here on Shabbat. You want to leave the world behind. You want to praise God. You love Yeshua, and then that person walks in. And everything starts to unravel. And all of a sudden, you were doing so well, but now everything starts going out of focus. Because they don't even come in, they like want to walk up to you. And that's the problem. The people look like trees walking around. And notice, it's trees. You know, what's a tree? Tree is an object. It's a thing. It can be used. You can use trees for profit. Make a lot of money on trees if you learn how to cut them just right. Trees are also something you can enjoy. Marvelous to go for a walk in the woods. You know, nothing better on a sunny day than sit in the shade of a tree. Great to have trees around because you can enjoy them. Of course, what happens when a tree gets in your way? Yeah, cut it down. After all, it's just a tree. See, you may even walk among the trees and talk. You may talk to the trees, but you don't really expect the trees to answer you back. Because trees aren't to be listened to. They're just objects to be enjoyed, used, removed, but never have a relationship. And if you did go out and start listening to the trees, people would feel sorry for you. They may even think you're a little bit crazy. Well, the Bible says this poor man's problem is he saw people. They look like walking trees. Our problem with people is that we have been trained to see them as trees that are walking around. Think about that. It's part of the Western culture. We've been trained to see people as if they're trees walking about, just objects to be used, never to have a serious relationship with. It's very possible for you to be sitting here in the midst of this group of mostly caring people. I know predominantly everybody that is here today. And you will go away having experienced a nice walk in the woods. Just a walk among the trees. You don't know anybody any better when you came in than when you go out. You don't see any reason to open up to anybody because you just enjoy the forest that's here, our little shul. And the main problem, I say again, was in his relationship with people. Now, that's very dangerous because people are not trees. Trees are one of God's creation, but when God made man, he said, this is different. This one is made in our image. This one is made in our likeness. People are people. Trees are things. Understand something. Grasp this. There's no such thing as a mere mortal. No such thing as a mere mortal. Every individual person you meet is immortal. Think about that. Every individual, not just your friends, every person, everything they do is of eternal repercussions. Every single person. Sometimes that's hard to get. We're sometimes blinded by the heaps of humanity that surround us. You know, you get into traffic, you go out to the store and you walk among the trees. They could be potted plants for all you really notice. And they're not trees that are working. Every person is of vast, unthinkable worth. Every person we should see. Every person we should see. Look at Yeshua as he moves about the Galilee. Isn't it significant? This is something we've talked about before. When you look at the ministry of the Messiah. How many people can you name that Yeshua healed? This is a pop quiz. How many people can you name that Yeshua healed? Name somebody Yeshua healed. The woman with Yeshua blood. What was her name? Don't know her name, but you're right. Lazarus, whose name was Eleazar. Yes, raising from the dead after 3 days is a messianic miracle. It's very significant. That's a healing. So, yes, Eleazar. Anybody else? The tax collector. He didn't heal a tax collector. Bartimaeus, Bartimai, the son of Timai. It's Aramaic, the son of Timai. Bartimaeus was blind and was healed. Anybody else? The guy, the priest, so the priest's servant, the guy's ear cut off, what was his name? You know, the centurion's servant, you know. Yeah. Name somebody Yeshua just talked to. Who did Yeshua talk to? Miriam Magdalene. Miriam from Magdala, up on the right on the hill, right over there from Kfar Nahum, Nicodemus Nicodemon, the scholar. Who else did he talk to? The Samaritan woman. Who else? The guy through the roof. Yeah, you understand that? Think about this. We have a custom in this country. We have a couple internationals here who would understand this. There's a custom that exists in the United States where I can walk up to somebody and say, "Hi, I'm Judah," and that wouldn't be considered rude. A lot of the world, you do that, they go, "Oh, that's unheard of." Most of the world. I don't see in the Bible where Yeshua walked in and say, "Hi, I'm Yeshua." You know? I don't see very often where names were exchanged. Not in that culture. Do you understand that? Think about this. Think about that blind man we talked about earlier that he healed. They ask him, "Who healed you?" And what did he say? "I don't know." Remember? "I don't know. Nobody introduced us." You realize what's going on here to an anonymous centurion service, to an anonymous woman at the well, to the anonymous lepers, to this anonymous man. Yeshua gave himself so totally to him, to them. It's a tremendous thing to think about. If ever there could have been people who looked like walking trees, you'd find them in the beggar's pitches. You'd find them in the lepers. You'd find them in the blind men. But Messiah gave himself to them as they were. They were persons of immortal worth. Do you remember when Yeshua met the tax collector Matityahu? What was it? Think about this. You're dealing with a tax collector. What was a tax collector? At that point in history, if you had somebody who was a tax collector, were they an employee of Rome? They worked for Rome. Okay? The rules of Rome were you bid on the job. You want to be a tax collector, you bid on the job. I will take the job. Here's the deal. Rome wants this much tax. You can collect as much as you want. Rome wants this much tax. Whatever you collect, you send us this much. The rest of it, we don't care about, which is why you bid on that kind of a job. All right? That kind of person was called Meshumed. He was a traitor to our people. Absolutely hated. If you even brushed against a tax collector in the marketplace, you had to go home and do a mikvah because you had become unclean. You had touched a tax collector. They were not referred to people. They were referred to as dogs. And don't be offended, but it's not the kind of a dog that a Gentile was referred to as a dog. These were pariah dogs. These were the dogs that ate the garbage down in the valley there. Okay? Not just a Gentile, a pariah dog. You brush up against them, you are unclean. Ooh, you touched a tax collector. The three synoptic accounts all record Yeshua calling the 12 Talmudim, including Matityahu, including Matthew. We are in Mark, so we'll start in Mark. Mark 2:14, page 1265. He passed from there, Yeshua passed from there, and he saw Levi ben Halfi, he was a Levite, sitting in his tax collection booth, and he said, "Follow me." He got up and followed him. So Mark says, yeah, he looked over there, he saw this tax collector over there, and he said, "Follow me," and he followed him. Luke records it in Luke 5, verse 27, which is on page 1296. Later, Yeshua went out and he saw a tax collector named Levi sitting in his tax collection booth, and he said, "Follow me." Does that, both of those sound pretty legitimate, right? He looks over, he sees a tax collector, he says, come and follow me. He was a tax collector, no question about this. Ah, but how did the tax collector record this? Because how the tax collector records this is actually different from how everybody else recorded this. And in Matityahu, in Matthew chapter 9, verse 9, which is on page 1233, the Stern translation reads, as Yeshua passed on from there, he spotted a tax collector named Matityahu sitting in his collection booth. He said, follow me, and he got up and followed him. Sounds right, doesn't it? It sounds like a logical way to interpret that. That's why David Stern, who's a very good friend of mine, interpret that way. It's a natural flow of what was seen. But once again, it is absolutely inaccurate because that's not what he wrote. And he's the one that was called. And so I chose the New King James, which is more accurate in this place. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and he said, follow me. So he rose and followed him. What's the difference between that account and the other two accounts? The other two accounts said he saw a tax collector. What did the tax collector say he saw? He saw a man who was a tax collector. There's a huge difference. Luke said he looked over, he saw the tax collector. Matthew said he looked over and he saw a man who was a tax collector. The other two accounts didn't get that. He said he looked over and he saw the tax collector. The tax collector, he looked over and saw a man, which is huge. When Matityahu looked up from his seat as custom, he saw somebody looking at him as if he were a man. Everybody else looked up like a dirty little tree that walked. But Yeshua saw a man and said, come follow me. You're not just a tree. You're a man. That's significant. Think about this. Yeshua, he spoke to sinners. He spoke to the crowds, right? It's anonymous crowds recorded publicans, sinners. I mean, no decent religious leader would bother himself with people like that. They were just saw them just as a blur of trees that walked. Isn't that one of the problems that the religious leaders were having? Well, he's hanging around with what? You know, Yeshua told stories to the people. Shepherd had lost a sheep. He had 99 others. But he stopped and went out to the wilderness to find the one that was lost. And Yeshua was saying to those sinners, just one of you is worth emptying all of heaven to find you. You're not a tree walking. You're a person. He said, you're a lost coin. You're worth searching for. You are significant. Which is why the crowds gathered to him. He saw them. The religious people saw a blur of trees walking. Consider the statements people make. Yeshua was sacrificed for us. You know what? If you can't get any closer than that, you're missing something. Yeshua loved me, gave himself for me. I was worth the Son of God taking on humanity in the womb of a virgin. I was worth that to God. He loved me, gave himself for me. You have to personalize that. It can't just be, he gave himself for us. No, he gave himself for me. It's a tragedy when we see people as trees walking about. You see the curse. It's the curse. Ever since the garden, the curse that's on the human race, a curse cut us off from God. We are cut off from our reaching out to God. We're also cut off from ourselves, largely. The curse has caused me to not even know who I am. In fact, most of the human race wanders around asking, who am I? The curse has also cut us off from each other. Now, I can kind of handle most of that as a good sinner. I just forget about God and I'll pretend like he's not even there. And I just shut him off into the periphery of my mind. Myself, I become so arrogant and proud, I think I've got it all together. Even though I become foolish and vain in my own imagination. And I could have handled my own fallen situation really well if it wasn't for other people. Because they won't disappear and I can't just shunt them off. So there I stand on center stage, think I am the center of all things. I am the wisest man that ever was. My decisions are the greatest. It helps to be young to think like this. Don't sit there looking pious. You thought the same way until you met with the Messiah, right? When we were younger. And we stood on center stage in our life, and we pushed God far enough away where we could even believe that. And in the stupidity of the darkness, whence that came, we were stupid enough to think that was wisdom. And then you came along. And you came right up on center stage and you shoved me aside. And I stood there just outside the spotlight. And I was mad. How dare you do that? Don't you know who I am? And there's a sensation that went from me to you called envy. You know, kind of mixed with anger, season, a little bit of bitterness there. And I stroked my self-pity, myself in self-pity, because I felt threatened. How can I handle this situation? I know, I shut myself off in a fantasy world. And in that fantasy world, once again, I pretend I've got it all together. And I look through the glass of my fantasy bubble at you, and I content myself. You're not really a person. You're just a tree walking. And I can handle my life as long as I don't have to deal with you, right? Didn't we feel that way? Don't come in here. Don't come near me. You hurt me when you come in. And I don't want to come in to you because I don't like the hurt. So let's just walk about like trees, and we'll never, never really touch each other. We'll just look at each other as trees, objects that can be used, maybe even enjoyed, but I'll leave you. I was never committed to you. You're only a tree. Other times you enjoy each other. Nothing like a good walk in the forest. You might even talk to each other. Two trees talking together. Works in a really strange way. Because you talk to each other, but you don't listen to each other. But that's okay. You don't really expect more than that. That's the way it works. So you know how this works? You're talking to me, right? Of course, I'm not listening. Don't be ridiculous. I don't listen to trees. And you're talking, and you sort of know I'm not listening, but that's okay. I'm just looking for an opening so that I can say something, preferably something about me. So when you finish talking, I jump in and I start talking. Even if you were asking a question, it doesn't really matter. You didn't really expect an answer. So I start to talk to you. Of course, you're not listening. You're waiting for an opening. And we stand there yakking away, talking to ourselves, but we don't listen to each other. You know, people in this culture are trained to see each other as trees walking. We do it to others. We do it to each other. We've gotten used to treating people like trees. What happens? We come into Messianic Judaism. We open up to God, and that's safe because all God does is bless me. That's okay. That's okay. That works. I can do that. I open up to myself. That hurts a little bit, but at least I know God's going to bless me. Yeshua is great. Oh, people, that's where I'm all out of focus. I keep seeing others as trees walking. Do I relate to you? Can you relate to this? Do you understand? Are you listening at all to what I'm saying? You know, are you with me in this, kids? We want it to all happen at once. Okay, let's fix this. We want that instant touch. But you know what? That's not the way it happens. So the miracle is there. Yes, it's there, but it's a miracle intention. It's still happening. The miracle that happened to you is real. And I have to ask a question. Is your problem that you see men as trees walking? Yeshua said to the man, do you see anything? And I don't know how you think. This is the way I think. Well, he could have answered a number of ways. He could have given up. Well, okay, pretty obvious this isn't for me. I heard he's healed other people. I don't know. It's okay. It's okay. You don't want to heal me all the way. It's acceptable. Yeah, I'm healed. Everything is fine. Couldn't be better. He could have lied for the glory of God. He don't want to make the Messiah look bad. You know, you don't think all the other blind people, you want to let them down. So you can just lie for the glory of God. Man said, I see, but this is really not, I'm not satisfied. If you're honest with Yeshua, the miracle will come out of tension. So what did Yeshua do? Frankly, it's a little disappointing. It's the only time he went back and prayed twice for somebody, and I thought, he can give me some insight. What do you do when you're praying for somebody more than once? Because I've been known to pray for people a lot more than once. And frankly, he just did a little bit more of what he had done before. Just laid his hands on him again. Would you believe me if I told you that 95% of solution of seeing each other is, to be honest, we have a problem seeing each other? Why pretend? I can see. We must be honest. I see, but my relationship with people, and it's jolting, to be honest. The reality is people treat me like a tree as well. And you know, that could be comfortable. This has happened before. People treat me like a tree. Well, that's comfortable because there's no responsibility there then. You know, it's okay. You don't have to just know that I exist. Leave me alone. And sometimes, yeah, that works. You know, honesty will allow us to fulfill in each other the reality. Men are not trees. To open up, even to the hurt of accepting each other as people, not trees. This is something, if you've gone to a membership class here, we talk about. We have a covenant membership here. When I come into covenant relationship with God, I came into covenant relationship with everybody else that came into covenant relationship with God. Oh, covenant relationship with God, yes. Covenant relationship with the people in the congregation, eh. Covenant relationship with everybody in the church that has a covenant relationship with God, oh, complicated. Boy, does that complicate everything. You know, I have to count on you and I have to count on me to express honestly my relationship with you and the Messiah. You know, Maria sat right over there and she was very quiet. And if you didn't go to her and talk to her, you didn't know her. She was shy. She was quiet. Quite a few of you knew her because you went to her. She didn't come to you. And if you didn't know her, it's like, well, she never talked to me. No, she didn't. But you know what? You could have talked to her. She was here for a year. If you're visiting, she was became a believer last February, and I did her funeral last Friday. You know, it's sad that in a congregation this small, you don't know each other. It's sad. It breaks my heart that people in this congregation don't get along with each other. I just wonder what it does to Messiah's heart, who has called us together. If this is your congregation, if this is your community, look around this room. Take a look around this room. What do you see? You see people, you're sitting here among the trees. Talk to each other. Phone people that are missing. I hope you miss some of the people that we're missing here. I do. Quite a few were out last night. I should look at my notes, see if I'm actually supposed to say anything. Not really. Learn to care for one another. Our picnics are met so the people that only come on Saturdays can meet the people that only come on Fridays. I believe in fellowship. I believe in community. I believe that we need each other, and the greatest gift that God has given us in this world is each other. So be blessed. Shabbat shalom, everybody. We're going to open up the front. You can come up. There's a flow of the Spirit that moves here. God is not instructing me to pray for you. If you have a prayer need, you can find me in the building. I'll be here as long as anyone else wants to talk to me. But it's God. You don't need me for God to bless you. If you want to come forward to meet with God, feel free, everybody. We don't end services cleanly. We kind of leave it up to the Spirit of God. It's about 17 till 1. Around 1 o'clock, if you feel like you need to move, you need to go home, you need to want to go to Oneg, enjoy yourself. Don't wait for somebody to tell you you're allowed to move. We're just going to worship God until we feel that we have finished with that. Be blessed, everybody. Shabbat shalom.